Hi, my name is Chris Dixon, and I'm here with Ben Silberman, the CEO and co-founder of Pinterest. Thanks for being here. Our fans. So thanks for being here, and maybe we'll start just by talking a little bit about your background. How did you start Pinterest?
Sure. Well, thanks for having me, first of all. A lot of people here.
Yeah.
So I guess we got started with Pinterest actually quite a while ago. I think a lot of people feel like maybe it just got started, but we got started back in, I think, around November 2009. I'd been working at Google before, and I had left and tried to build a couple products, and Pinterest was just this product that I think I'd always wanted to build. It was something that even as a kid, I was a huge collector. I collected insects and I collected stamps, and I was just obsessed with this idea that these things that you collect, they just say so much about kind of who you are and what you're interested in. And I think that was the original thing that I sort of wanted to capture with Pinterest.
And so, after college, you did some consulting or something, and then you worked at Google.
Yeah. So I guess I had sort of a roundabout entry into technology. So when I was in college, I was pre-med, actually. Both my parents are doctors. Both my sisters are doctors. So I figured that I would just be a doctor as well.
Yeah.
And I think sometime in my junior year, I had this like sudden realization that maybe that wasn't for me, and I was kind of lost at sea. I didn't really know what to do, and so I ended up taking a consulting job in D.C. And this was 2003 when I graduated, and at that time, I was just reading about what was happening in California. I remember actually the day I found TechCrunch, the blog. I remember thinking, like, what a crazy name for a blog, like TechCrunch. And I'm reading about Kevin Rose and Digg, and just thought, I just wanted to be part of that. I just wanted to be closer to this really big story that felt like was the story of my time and I had no part of. So that's what kind of got me to head out to California.
So you headed out to California, and then that's when you worked at Google?
Yeah. I didn't have an engineering background, so I really had to cajole my way in to Google. And I started basically in online sales and operations, which is kind of customer support, supporting AdSense. And while I was there, I started to help design some of the display advertising products out there. I mean, for me, Google was like, it was like the coolest place.
Yeah.
I thought it was the coolest place because...
It's like the environment and the creativity? Or?
Yeah. People there were so smart. And they were all doing these really interesting things. And I just felt really lucky to be part of it, even in a really small way.
And you were there with, like, was Kevin Systrom from Instagram there?
Yeah, Kevin Systrom was there.
And, like, Ev from Twitter was there, and Dennis from Foursquare.
Yeah, I mean...
A lot of people say, like, Google doesn't have social DNA, but it's funny, because, like, all those people were there, like, in the same cafeteria for a while.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't know those guys while I was there, but there was such a concentration of talent at that company. Anyway, I just felt super fortunate to work there. I think that Google, it taught me these two things that were really important. You know, one was that, I mean, they really had this audacity to think at a huge scale.
Yeah.
In a way that at a regular job, if you're doing consulting or any other job, you don't really think about. I thought that was so cool. Like, Google was like the only company that they're like, well, you know, we're making so much money. Let's take a picture of every street, like, in the world. nobody does that. And just being around... Yeah, and I think just being around those people was really inspiring.
Yeah.
And the other thing that was good was that it just exposed me to a lot of people that were great at building products, great engineers, like great product managers. A lot of people say that, as you said, Google didn't have social in its DNA, but what it did have was the ability to build these incredibly useful, incredibly fast, incredibly complicated products. And so it was just awesome. It was awesome to be close to that.
And so the whole time, were you thinking about doing a startup then?
Yeah, you know, I think I was thinking about products. I don't know. I guess I'm...
What were your inspirations? Like, what were your favorite products?
So I'd always been really interested in social products.
Yeah.
So I've been watching Twitter, like not really understanding it, but just being totally, totally fascinated with it. For a while, I was really interested in discussion forums. I thought Reddit was this like amazing kind of online community. I thought the Google Answers product, even though it didn't turn out to be successful, was a really, really interesting idea. And ultimately, I mean, the reason I left Google was not because I didn't love that company. It was just because of my particular background. It would have been really hard to build products there.
Because they want people with an engineering background, right?
Yeah, and I don't fault them for that. They have kind of an embarrassment of riches there. They have all these like extraordinary engineers. But when it became clear that that probably wasn't something that I'd be able to do, that's when I decided to take off.
And that's when you started thinking about Pinterest, or you had the idea already, or?
Yeah, so there were a few months where I was just figuring stuff out.
This was like, what, 2008? Because like, there's this myth on the blogs, right, that like Pinterest was started like 4 months ago or something.
Yeah.
Like, but you've actually been at it for a long time, which I think is important for people to know, because these things always take much longer than people sort of think, I think. Like, I remember I heard the Angry Birds CEO talking, yeah. and everyone says they're an overnight success. It turns out it was like their 74th game or something, and they finally made it or something. You know?
Yeah. So I had a bunch of ideas. I think when I first left, I was literally just trying to figure things out, like trying to figure out how to not just go to your job in the morning, which sounds really easy, but all of a sudden you have all this time and no structure. And I ended up hooking up with one of my college friends, Paul, and we took a run at making some iPhone apps for a while, which was really challenging at the time. And that was a time when it took forever to get an app approved into the store, and you're watching your savings just like slowly deplete as you're waiting longer and longer. And eventually we came to this idea that I'd had about collections. And I think that was back in November 2009 when we first started planning that out. And as I said, it was one of those ideas that I can't say it came from like really hard-nosed business analysis.
Did you do like market size analysis with spreadsheets?
Yeah. It was just something I really wanted to see built. I just thought it could just be so good for the world if you could share these things about yourself. And
it was based on a behavior that you yourself had done, and I think a lot of people do, like saving, they have folders full of inspiring pictures, or maybe ripping out pictures in magazines, right? I mean, these are behaviors that already existed, but maybe someone hadn't created a website specifically for that purpose.
Yeah, I think the idea of collecting for me, when I say collecting, I guess I don't mean like collecting insects like I did,
yeah.
or collecting coins. I think of collecting a little bit more broadly. Like I think of it as kind of taking these objects in the world that you feel like are representative of who you are, and using those as a way to share them with the world. So that sort of mental model for me has always been there. You know, when I go to someone's house, I look at their books and I think, oh, those books are like a collection. When I open my wife's closet, and she has shoes and clothes, and that's her collection of clothing. When I think of the art people put on their walls or the furniture they have in their home, like those are all the same idea of collecting. And so I thought, to me, that was just so interesting because there wasn't a way you could do that online. As you said, you might have desktop folders of images, or you might be using your blog and sort of jury-rigging it to do that. I think a lot of people were doing that at the time. But there wasn't anything that was actually built around discrete collections that were made for you. So
how'd you get started? You said your savings account was being depleted, and so did you raise money, or did you just start building stuff? Or?
Yeah, so we had taken a little bit of seed money from some folks from all over the place, people that actually had kind of just bet on us, but not very much money. And we were contracting a lot of our development. So it was really expensive. We weren't paying ourselves at that time. And with Pinterest, we had also hooked up with another one of my friends named Evan, who is actually in graduate school at Columbia studying architecture. And Evan started working with us on the design kind of nights when he was at school, and we were sort of building it. So it was bi-coastal, a two-office, three-person operation. And I think in those early days, I think we spent a lot more time than most people would have on the design of the site itself. And we really labored over the design kind of on two levels. We labored over the actual display of these collections. I just felt that collections have to be something that you're proud of, that you want to show to people, that are beautiful, and they're almost better as the sum of a lot of things than as just a list of items. And then we spent a lot of time on the actual model of the product. So we were really determined to have a very simple product that only had a few objects, right? You'd have boards, you'd have people, and you'd have pins. And we really felt that if we concentrated on making everything built on those three elements, the project hopefully would be really understandable to people. And to me, that's really important. I have so much respect for Twitter because of how disciplined, I don't know, intentionally or unintentionally they've been in terms of creating very, very simple and symmetrical models for engagement that are really easy to understand. And we wanted to do a lot of the same things.
And how did you... did you just sort of design this through your intuition, or did you do like testing with people, with users, or how did you kind of, what was your development process?
I think we were building it for ourselves mainly. So in terms of the core elements of the site, I mean, we just spent a lot of time talking about what would work, you know, what would work for 3 people or 10 people or 20 people. We never tried to think what would work for like 1 million people. And we would just sort of vet against whether it would make sense as we scaled it up. We had debates about what, you know, should we even have boards? Should we have the concept of a feed? Should we have repinning? Should that just be a link to the original item? Should it exist as an independent item? We sort of worked through on paper all of those. And then on the flip side, the grid itself, which I think a lot of people, we see versions of that kind of grid all over the place on the internet now. At the time, we actually really labored over that grid. I think there were literally dozens of versions of that were fully coded, fully styled with live production data that we went through, and we would try, we'd vary the width, we'd vary where the metadata was, we'd vary, is the person on the left side or the right side, is the caption high contrast or low contrast, does it work on a 13-inch screen, does it work on a 15-inch screen? Because we just felt like if your collections didn't look awesome, if they weren't incredibly beautiful, like why would anyone spend their time to build them? And so we spent a lot of time on that. It wasn't super quantitative, but we didn't want to send it out until at least we felt that it was something that was beautiful and it was worth people's time.
There's a lot of talk now in the startup world about sort of this, you know, minimum viable product, kind of just put something out there, see how people use it. It sounds like you sort of didn't take that approach. Like you really wanted to get it, like, you know, there's an expression, if you're not embarrassed by the product you release too late or something, right? I think Reid Hoffman said or something. It sounds like you took a sort of a different approach.
Yeah, I mean, the hard part about that idea of minimum viable product for me is, like, you don't know what minimum is and you don't know what viable is. All you know is what the product is. I think what's different now is that the average consumer has really high expectations, like for good reason. They have high expectations of the services they use. I mean, they have a phone in their pocket that was like impeccably crafted. They can use, you know, Facebook, which is like the pinnacle of social design. They can use Apple products, which are the pinnacle of visual and interactive design. They can use Google products, which are kind of the pinnacle of efficiency and utility. And if you don't give them something that's worth their time, I mean, they shouldn't give you their time, right? They could be watching TV or like playing Angry Birds. Like you have to show that you put in as much effort as you expect for them to put in to you. And so I think that for me, when I think about a minimum viable product, I'd say the hard part is keying in on what is essential about your product. Like what's the central element that you're testing, and narrow the scope. But I wouldn't necessarily compromise too much on the quality.
So what happened then? So then you released it and immediately had 20 million users. You know, what happened along the way?
No, it was actually, it's funny. I was reading that the Lean Startup book, and they talk about the proxy numbers on like when you should just like call it quits and give up. And I'm really glad I didn't read that because we would have totally been able to. I mailed it to 200 of my friends, and I think 100 of them open the email, which says something, right? Like, it's like, hey, I've been working on this for 7 months. Like 100 of them open the email. I mean, we had...
How many actually? Like,
I mean, it was like catastrophically small numbers.
Did like anyone get really into it, or?
Well, that was the thing. So the first crew of people that I emailed were a lot of people from Google and I knew in California. And then I emailed, you know, for good measure, a lot of my friends that I grew up with in Iowa, around the Midwest, people I'd gone to college with. And there were a few people in there that actually they used it, and they kind of used it the way that we had hoped people would use it. And that was the big thing. And so I think those few people actually kept us going for a really long time. But I want to say 9 months in, we were still under 10,000 users. And a lot of those people weren't using the product every day. So it took a really long time. I don't know, someone told me that someone was asking, like, why did you keep going? Like, you know, why didn't you bail? And I was trying to think of, like, a really good principled answer. And I think the answer was, it was just, like, the idea of telling everyone that we blew it was just so embarrassing. I was like, Google's never going to hire me. Like, they barely hired me the first time. Like, I'm never going to get back in. And that was part of it. And the other part was just that, I mean, we really believed there was something beautiful that we could build. And we just felt like if every day we were getting a little bit closer to something that we would be really proud of, like, we would never regret the time we invested.
So what was the turning point? Like, when did things pick up? Was there like a moment, something happened, or?
Yeah, so there wasn't like one moment, but we ended up doing a bunch of things that I think together started to build momentum. So one was like just by chance, I went to a conference out in Utah, and it was a conference for design bloggers. One of my friends, Christine, invited me out there, and I ended up meeting a lot of people that were really interested in the intrinsic behavior of the site. These are people that were into activities offline that often had them creating things like inspiration books. And so they started using it. And we actually organized a really small sort of online event. It was called Pin It Forward, where we invited people to create their own pin boards and to create them about themselves or something they were passionate about. And those people were then given invites to invite a few more people. And there was never like a celebrity that joined where it just went from like 0 to 60.
It wasn't like Ashton Kutcher joined.
It wasn't Ashton, regrettably. But what did happen was we started to see kind of regular percentage growth. So people would join, and then they'd be really proud of these collections they create, and they'd show their friends. And then those people, a subset of them, would join. And all this time, we were just trying to make the product work. Like, just work.
You mean just, like, keep the servers going or whatever?
Yeah, and not because it was scaling fast, but because we were building a product for the first time. And we were learning a lot about it.
I see. How did you get... Did you like, talk to the users? Like, how did you understand? Or you just sort of looked at the metrics? Or how did you sort of figure out what to tweak?
So we talked to the users a lot. So I think I personally wrote to probably the first 5,000 users. I still get emails from that first group of users. I'd give them my cell phone, and like we talk about it. Like I meet up with them, and I don't know. Some people say like it showed like a lot of commitment, but actually, I was just so happy. I mean, this is like months in that people were using it, and they had an opinion. Like I don't know. I've worked on products that I put a lot of effort into, and they go down in the middle of the night, and you wake up and no one's noticed.
Yeah.
like. You got the downtime alert, but it didn't matter. Like nobody in the world had accessed your product at that moment.
I think it's funny because I talk to a lot of entrepreneurs and they're like, we're going to launch next week. And I'm like, having done this myself, you know, like oftentimes you launch and it's like three of your friends come or something, right? Like it's
it was a tough time, but I have to say it was also really fun. I mean, it was really fun because. I don't know, we were kind of writing our own destiny, and it was cool. I mean, it's cool to think of an idea and then get to work on the designs and then get to see it kind of in front of you materialize, even if it's not as good as you want it. I don't know, to me that's really exciting. I think it's like the most fun that you can have. So.
And so the impression from like the tech blogs is that Pinterest really took off kind of in the non-techie communities first, sort of sort of the opposite pattern that we'd seen with, like, let's say Twitter, where it was sort of the South by Southwest crowd or whatever. Is that actually how it happened, or?
Yeah, I mean, it definitely didn't take off in the Bay Area for a long time, or New York. I don't know. Silicon Valley is kind of binary. It's like you're either in Silicon Valley or you're everyone else. I mean, I'm hesitant to call, like, everyone who doesn't live in the Bay Area or New York, like, a non early adopter.
Yeah.
But I guess, I mean, for me, I think that the whole concept of early adoption is just a lot different than it used to be. I mean, back in the day, if you were an early adopter, that meant that you bought extra expensive internet, like you had a smartphone and no one else had a smartphone. You were trying new services, that was your hobby. And now, I mean, everyone that I grew up with has Facebook. Everyone has a phone that's often an iPhone or an Android phone, so they have access to the same channel. So to me, it makes a ton of sense that services would find markets that don't happen to be in Silicon Valley. And I think what was really cool about that was that the people that were using Pinterest really early on, they were using it for kind of their hobbies and their interests in their real life, which was really gratifying to me. You know, when people would plan a recipe on Pinterest, they would cook it for their family that night. You know, when they were redecorating their home, they would get that furniture and go buy it for their home. And I don't know, I just really love the idea that you could take an offline activity and then build an online service to try to make that activity more liquid and make geography less important. And then it would then get people offline again to go do those things. Like, to me, that was really satisfying and super exciting.
And so when was it, like, maybe 6 months ago when suddenly you became the, you know, all the tech blogs started writing about you, and I guess your growth, and maybe that coincided with your user growth taking off. Is that right?
Yeah, I mean, what happened was we were really into the product. And at any given moment, I think that just by personality, we would rather be working on the product than doing interviews. And so what happened was there was all this pent up, like there was this vacuum of news. And I think, I don't know, a few months ago, it all broke at the same time. And it was all really newsworthy. It was a really weird phenomenon. I mean, we just been working on this product. I mean, up until even mid last year, it was like four or five of us in this little apartment. And then all of a sudden, I was opening up these blogs that I've been reading for years. I mean, some of the blogs that inspired me to, like, go out and move to California, written by these people that I'd heard of, like you. and they're writing about our product. I thought that was really, it was just a very surreal, it's just weird. I mean, it's just really weird.
How's it been? I mean, has it been stressful?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's both. It's really exciting. You know, it's exciting to see people using the product in ways that we never really expected. And it's exciting that people care a lot. And then you also feel kind of this weight of responsibility because you've sort of brought this little thing into the world, this little product, and you want to see it get better. You want to see it be better than what it is today. I think everyone who makes products has this simultaneous, like, joy and, like, almost shame looking at the product. Like, you're looking at it all day, and all you can see are all these things that you want to make better and more crafted and more beautiful and work better. And so I think it's a little bit of both of those feelings.
What are some of the, so going back to the I think it's probably a caricature of Pinterest, right, on the tech blogs or something, is it's like, you know, it's all cupcakes and recipes or something, right? I mean, so
yeah.
What's the actual behavior? I guess first, like, is that true? And secondly, what are some of the interesting emerging behaviors you've seen?
Yeah. I mean, there are no cupcakes. It's not one cupcake company. So there are a lot of people that use it for what I'd call core lifestyle activities. I don't know, some blogs have been really surprised at when they look at these activities, but for me, I mean, one thing that I always used as a proxy is I would go to the bookstore in Palo Alto, and I would look at the lifestyle magazines. And I always figured that the magazines, where there were a lot of them, those were probably some market clearing indication of how much interest there are. And there are a lot of magazines on decorating, there are magazines on cooking, on home design, on fitness and sports, and those are a lot of the categories that are really early. I think what's been cool is just there have been a bunch of people that have used it for things that we don't expect, and that's in that kind of early group is diversifying all the time. So I think a couple weeks ago we had our first satire boards with the political campaign that I thought were really funny. There was this fake Mitt Romney board that was pretty hysterical. It had all these yachts, like Mitt Romney's yacht collection. There are a whole bunch of museums who have joined, which I love art, and it was so cool. You know, like the SF MoMA has an account, the American Institutes of Art, and for them, like their mission is to help kind of share art with the world. Literally, I mean, it's how the Smithsonians are like actually funded, and so for them to be able to show these collections and let people take an item from that collection and pin it to their own. That gets me really, really jazzed. So yeah, I mean, just a lot of things that we never expected. There are travel boards now, which are new. I can't say we anticipated that. There's a woman in Spain, and she just creates these incredibly elaborate travel guides to every city she's ever lived in. And because she's an artist, it has like every gallery, like every artistic coffee shop. So yeah, I mean, every day, literally, I mean, we see at least one board where we just couldn't have imagined like how people would use it before, and to me, that's really exciting.
So you guys are at least so I don't know if you pioneered or certainly popularized this idea of a board as opposed to I think sort of the popular UI element in the last decade has been the feed,
yeah.
And now it seems to be the board, and everyone's adding boards to their websites. I think you told me before a story that like when you were first raising money, everyone was like, oh, you don't have a feed. You need a feed. You can't have a board or something, right? Like that was sort of like the valley wisdom or something.
Yeah, I mean, when we first started, people were obsessed with this idea of real time and text. They were just, everything was like real time text feeds. And so I think actually Pinterest was really hard for a lot of people to understand early on, especially in Silicon Valley. And that could have been on us for not communicating the vision as clearly as we could have. But yeah, to me, boards are a very human way of looking at the world. People aren't random access. You know, Google's always had like tags in Gmail, but I've always loved folders because folders aren't just a way of retrieving things later. They're a way for me to sort of make sense of all this chaos. And I think of boards in a lot of ways the same way. So for me, I wanted to create kind of a service that was a little bit timeless. You know, if something's your favorite book, it's no less your favorite book, you know, 72 hours from now, or a year from now, or 5 years from now, or 10 years from now, right? That still says something about who you were then and who you want other people to know you as. But at the time, all the services, as I said, were totally real-time, and Twitter was like the buzz, right? So you never see a tweet older than like 48 hours, unless it's ironic. Only ironic tweets are old. But Pinterest has this sort of timelessness that I really love, and I think boards are part of that idea.
Yeah. And so like as a result of your success, there've been a lot of people have taken the UI element, which I think is, you know, sort of normal, like using best practices, but there've been things like Pinspire, which is a clone, which is like the most shameless ripoff I've ever seen in my life. You guys look at Pinspire, they like literally copied the CSS or something. It's like ridiculous. But, you know, how do you think about that, and does that make you feel like you need to expand internationally more quickly, or what are you going to do? Or
yeah, I think that, I mean, clones have always happened. I think what's different now is that they happen faster and faster. I think that's like the major difference. I mean, we think about it in two ways. I mean, you know, first, like what makes Pinterest special, it's not like the icon and all of the CSS and the JavaScript and the database, it's the people inside of it, literally. If you were to pull out all the people and all the pins, you have this like scaffolding that's totally empty. And so we try to treat the people who use the service really well, and we try to make the service really good for them. And so the way that we tend to think about competition in general is we obviously want to be aware of it, but we just want to make, we want to Pinterest the best product that we can. the internet, like, things are free, right? Like, why would you use like the second rate?
Well, but
that,
like, what they're trying to do is go like do it in different languages and try to get, you know, Brazil before you do or something, right? Like,
yeah, and we'll have to internationalize the site. I mean, I think that there are a lot of people that are starting to use it internationally already because it's a very visual site. But most of our focus is not on racing against clones. It's trying to make sure that what we release is really high quality and really beautiful.
So there have been some criticisms about like copyright issues. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think every internet service that gets big has questions about copyright. Google did back in the day, Blogger did, Twitter did, every time you like something on Facebook. And for us, copyright's just, it's super important. So, you know, we follow the letter of the DMCA. We have a process that's very kind of prescribed and very efficient. So when people notify us of alleged copyright infringements, we take the image and we tell the person who put the image up, and we have a process for taking it down and filing counter notice. And then I think that just like beyond the letter of the law, as a company, you know, we just care about it a lot. It's fundamental to what we do. I mean, the mission of Pinterest is not to keep people on the site forever. It's to get them to go out and find those objects, right? And find out where they can get that recipe to cook, or where they can go to that place that they want to visit, where they can get that product. And so driving traffic out is really fundamental for us. And so kind of extra outside of the law, we're trying to build really great tools that help people control their content. So the first thing we put out was this no-pin tool for people that say, hey, I don't want my stuff pinned up there. We've rolled that out with partners who want to put a pause on that. At the same time, like, a rapidly growing amount of content is coming from people that are putting the pin it button onto their site explicitly. And the types of content and the diversity of that content is changing really fast. But overall, it's just something that's really important for us. And I spend actually quite a bit of my time kind of reaching out to people that are concerned about it. I'm trying to understand what their needs are long term and trying to put together kind of a product and a solution that gives value back for everyone.
The other kind of controversy is about monetization. Like, you were, I guess, doing some things with affiliate links, and can you talk about that?
Yeah, sure. This one's kind of funny because monetization's never been a really big focus for us yet. But early on in the site, we really were curious. We were like, when people are using Pinterest, are they using it for what we hope they'll use it for? Meaning that, are they using it for these real-world activities in their life, or is it just like an online hobby, like a scrapbook? And so, you know, we had put in an affiliate tracking system to try to understand that behavior and sort of left it up. It was like four of us there and just sort of seeing how it went. And once we felt like we had data on that, we ended up kind of removing the service. And just after that, there was like a lot of blogging written about how we were doing it. I think that for us, when I think about the long-term kind of monetization for Pinterest, I think it's going to have to be something that speaks to what I guess is the heart of the product itself, which is helping people to discover things that they didn't know they wanted. And we have kind of ideas, but we just haven't gotten a chance to implement them because I think we have so much more work to do in making that discovery process just really amazing. That's the problem. Like, if there was one problem that I'm really interested in that I hope Pinterest can solve, it's helping people to discover things that they didn't know that they wanted. I think that if you can almost form what you want into language, like into two or three words, like Google will autocomplete and get you like 80% there, or Amazon will. And if you can't, you just have all kinds of people trying to tell you what you want. You have like display ads following you on the internet, and you have paper catalogs that are in your mailbox. You have billboards that are on the 101. But no one has really made a lot of progress towards kind of building a place that you want to go every day to discover things that feel like they're kind of hand-picked just for you. That's what I hope that we can do.
So the affiliate stuff you did before was an experiment and is not your long-term business plan?
It's not our long-term goal.
And you don't, you just sort of, you assume there's something there, but you haven't, that's not your focus, and you don't really have a specific plan right now.
It's not our focus right now. I mean, I think we have a lot of kind of really good indications of what it might look like, but one of the hardest things about a really small startup is focus. It's literally picking what's the most leveraged use of our time? And I think that there's just so much to do in terms of the product as it exists today that we want to spend our time kind of growing and nurturing that product kind of before we step into monetization. And that's also the rationale behind why we raised kind of venture capital. When you get venture capital, you buy the freedom to focus in the short term on a product, and then you can put off a little bit the specifics of monetization.
And so what are the things? Can you talk about some of the things you're working on in the product that you want to improve?
Yeah, there's a ton of stuff.
Your roadmap or whatever, to the extent you can share it.
I mean, we can't share everything, but there's some really exciting things. You know, in the near term, we're redesigning the profile on Pinterest. And it should be up actually pretty soon. I expect it to go up this week, but I'm so excited about it, actually. There were two things that we wanted to do with the profile. We wanted to make it more beautiful, and I know that probably sounds really generic. I'm like standing up here, I keep saying like I want to make the product beautiful, but we wanted to make your profile very, very different in kind from the profile that you have on Facebook or the profile you might have on Twitter or your homepage. We wanted it to be this sort of snapshot of like what you're about, and represent that visually. And then we also wanted to make it easier for you to discover new people who influence. So we're going to introduce this idea of showing who people repin from, so you can go from person to person and see who influences them. And to me, the reason that's so exciting is that a lot of the connections that people have on Pinterest are their friends from Facebook or people they follow on Twitter, but a lot of them are also people that they're not connected in any other social network to. So we're really excited about that. So profile is one thing. We're kind of expanding the number of things that you can pin. So you'll be able to pin from a lot of different sources. So we're expanding video to include things like Vimeo and Hulu and Netflix. And that's really exciting for me. And we're also making it so attribution is easier and easier as part of that process. And the last thing, which is a little bit longer term, is we're working on platform expansion. So I can't wait to be using Pinterest on the iPad. I'm really excited about it. We have an awesome team working on it. So I'm really looking forward to that. And I think all of the platform kind of plays that we do, so whether it's iOS or Android or iPad, will be built on a common API framework that when we're ready and when we feel like it's really stable and it's something that developers can sort of sink their teeth into, we'd be excited about opening that up. We just don't want to do it too early because I think we've all built on APIs where things are really moving about a lot, and it can be frustrating until it's really big.
Yeah, I mean, I know a lot of startups are waiting for your API. So you don't really know, have a date for that yet or whatever? But
we don't have an exact date. I mean, we've been talking with a lot of developers about what they want.
I've heard, by the way, like startups pitching, like, we're going to be the Zynga for Pinterest already. You're like, you're at that state. I don't know what that even means, but... But I think the thought is, when Facebook opened up their API, right, like all these interesting companies and services emerged, and you're getting to the people or whatever startups are thinking that you're getting to that scale, that people are sort of eagerly anticipating your API.
Yeah, I mean, I can't wait to do it. I mean, I think that as a company, Pinterest itself has been this huge beneficiary of the APIs and the platforms that other people have created. So it just seems right to eventually find a way to kind of open our API out. And what I think is cool is that the sort of data structure that's latent in Pinterest is different than these other relationships. It's not just you and who your friends are. It's you and these collections of things that you're passionate about, and then how those are connected to other people that share those passions. And to me, that's really exciting. I mean, I think that...
Sort of the interest graph or whatever people talk, right?
Yeah, and I mean, for me, I want Pinterest to feel like a really human service, like something that's really accessible. I don't know, maybe because I didn't study engineering or I didn't grow up with a lot of technology, but I just feel like the internet's still so abstract. I mean, there's a file system in the navigation. To me, that always felt really weird, and I hope that pins can be these really beautiful digital representations of objects that don't just have metadata around kind of where the object came from and why you personally loved it, but also can tell you about the context that you enjoy that object in. So, you know, my iPhone to me is like this thing I carry in my pocket, and to someone else, it's beautiful things that Apple as a company made, and to someone else, it's gifts that I want to give to my niece or my nephew. I mean, these are very different concepts, and those objects mean something different to different people. And I think Pinterest can kind of bring that context kind of to the objects that exist kind of in the digital world.
Yeah. So can we talk about a little bit about the challenges of scaling? And I guess I see that in a couple aspects. Like, one is, it's impressive that given your growth, you haven't had the kind of fail whale problem or whatever. So I guess you've that must be a significant challenge, just kind of keeping the servers running and things, right? And then number two is sort of, well, let me maybe first ask you about that. Like, just the engineering challenges, have that been significant?
I'm glad that you've perceived it as smooth.
Oh, I don't know. Maybe.
From the outside. It's been really challenging for us. I mean, most of the credit to that goes to the engineering team we put together. We have an awesome team, honestly. They're really diverse. They come from a lot of different technical backgrounds, but what they're good at is sort of digging into a problem and figuring it out. But definitely, like this last winter, it was pretty touch and go. We would have meetings on Wednesday about how to keep the site up on Thursday. And so it was really, really scary. We were basically sharding every table on the database and migrating the data at the same time, kind of, and dealing with growth. And that was really hard. And a lot of those legacy technologies that we tried are gone now, but we literally had remnants of every single database that we had tried. So I think that scaling is an ongoing challenge. And the other people to thank, aside from the team, is, of course, we now have access to kind of cloud services that just didn't exist before. We couldn't have built this without Amazon Web Services or equivalent services. We couldn't have done this without all the tools that are created by open source. And I just think it's really amazing to think that with a handful of people, you can build a service that, you know, millions of people can access in real time around the world. Whereas only 3 or 4 years ago, it would have been extraordinarily difficult.
Well, and you'd have to. One interesting thing is that a team like yours, which is product focused, I think more and more we're seeing those being the sort of the successful teams. Whereas 10 years, or five years ago, you had to have a whole bunch of sort of, you know, engineers because you had to build all this infrastructure, right? I think so. You know, the cloud services have enabled like people like you to build these really interesting services. And it's sort of true if you look at all the successful startups now. They're all sort of run by product people and not by engineers anymore.
Yeah, I mean, I think the team that you put together ends up reflecting the product that you build out of the back, right? So if you want to build a super technical structured data product, or you want to build Dropbox, you need to have a super strong engineering team. I mean, I always tell people that are interviewing with Pinterest that I think engineering is incredibly important, but I kind of think of engineering like the chefs at a restaurant, right? Like, no one's going to deny that chefs are really, really important, but there are all these other people that are really integral to making a great meal. And that's just different, I think, from the culture, certainly at Google, where it was kind of like engineering and then everyone who supported engineering. But that's also a reflection of the type of product that we're building, right? We're building a product for people, and we're building a product that depends upon people using it in a certain way. And so we actually have three different functions that all work together at Pinterest. We have an engineering function, we have a design function, and then we have a social function. And that function is probably the least kind of spelled out, but it includes people with kind of strong stats backgrounds, engineers, people that are great kind of community managers and communicators. And their responsibility is literally to understand kind of both quantitatively and qualitatively like what's going on in the community and try to feed that into any product decision that we make. I don't know if products are becoming more or less dependent on engineering. I think it just depends a lot on what kind of product it is.
What about the challenges of scaling the social community, the community aspect? Like, we've seen websites that got really popular and then maybe got, you know, the wrong community evolved, and then they failed as a result. Like, do you worry about that?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, look, there's no Amazon Web Services for like community or customer support or building really good interactions with people. So that's an ongoing challenge. I think that it's funny. A lot of social psychology and political science has really well developed thinking about how social groups form, like how social norms propagate, how you deal with identity. But translating that into kind of product insights is still really tough. And I think one thing that's different about Pinterest than Facebook that makes it more challenging is that, you know, Facebook is basically governed by the social norms that people have between individuals, right? You know, I'm friends with you, or I'm friends of friends with you, so I'm not going to, you know, say something terrible about you in public. And Pinterest is a funny hybrid, and I think it's a hybrid that you're seeing more and more of both people that you know in person, where you're governed by those prevailing social norms, and people that you've never met before. And so I think that we have to invest in kind of growing and cultivating that community in the same way that we invest in kind of scaling the infrastructure, or the same way we invest into iterating on the design. Because I think you're right. I think it's really important, and it's a really challenging problem that not a lot of people have totally cracked.
Do you find yourself, I mean, one thing I've found in talking to successful like social product designers is that they have to do a lot of what like people call social grooming, which is sort of like, you know, hey, that's like either through positive example, kind of saying, hey, this is the right way to use it. And also maybe in some cases, if, I don't know what, if you get inappropriate content, things like that, like removing things. Do you find yourself doing a lot of sort of that kind of grooming?
Yeah, and it's as you said, I mean, I think getting the right kind of behavior in a social site is both a matter of actually proactively outreaching to people. So especially early on, we were really diligent about writing to individuals, asking them what they thought, asking them why they were using it in a particular way, when they could use it in this way, and seeing if that was a reflection that the product was bad or that the communication of the product was bad. And then you also end up building sets of tools which help you to kind of do these things at scale. So a lot of the manual things that you start doing, you then slowly outsource. So I think a lot of the big social services are probably really good at this. A lot of games, like massive multiplayer games, or people that run discussion forums are actually, I think, the best at this kind of behavior. They understand that different people in a community have different roles, and those roles translate into different behaviors. So it's something that...
Like on Pinterest, what are the, like, do you sort of have archetypes of like different people?
We sort of on the back end have archetypes. We haven't given people different administrator privileges yet.
Yeah. But you think of like this person is someone who brings new stuff into the system. This is sort of someone who I don't know, you tell me, but like...
We characterize people kind of on a lot of different dimensions, and we're still figuring out the best way to do that. But for us, I think that we're at such an early stage, like the site is so young, that we, more than anything, just want to show people that they can use it for something that just exists in their regular life. That, like, that's the overarching challenge. Like, typically when you see a website, it's this way almost to escape from the world around you. It's kind of distract you from a hard day at work. And the thing that I loved about Facebook was that whether or not Facebook was there, you know, you'd have friends and you'd have family members, and by easing the way that you share with people, you actually open up new ways to connect with these people you care about. In a lot of ways, Pinterest is similar. Like, whether or not Pinterest exists or doesn't exist, people have passions or hobbies or aspirations or things that they want to do, and they'll seek out people to inspire them to do it. Our hope is that just Pinterest can make that so much easier and so much better by putting it online and making things like geography a lot less relevant.
So I'm guessing that there's a fair number of entrepreneurs here, as, given that this is a South by Southwest. What are some of the, just maybe we could talk a little bit about like lessons you've learned or advice you can give or something. Like, what are some of the things that you've, maybe top things you've learned running a startup?
Don't take too much advice, I guess.
So don't
listen. The first thing.
But you got a lot of bad advice?
No, not at all. It's just that most people who have a lot of advice to give, I mean, there are a few people that are exceptions. You know, they have a lot of data in front of them, but most people basically generalize whatever they did, and they're like, that was the strategy that made it work. So, you know, people ask me, you know, was the fact that Pinterest was invite-only, was that the secret to its success? And you can't really A-B test that, right? Like, I don't know. Like, maybe Pinterest would be 10 times bigger a year ago had it not been. Or people will say that, you know, great founding teams are always... you know, two engineers who dropped out of Harvard and raised money. So, I mean, I would say the first thing is, like, I think every company cuts its own path, but every company is under a ton of pressure to look like the last company that someone remembers that was really successful. And I don't know, there are a lot of different ways that people can be successful. So that's one thing that I think was really important to me. You know, I think the other thing is just to be really good to the people that you build relationships with, which sounds really basic. That's probably just a lesson for life, but there were so many people along the way that were really helpful to us, and they weren't helpful to us because they had any financial gain. Like, we were like this nobody startup, but they were just excited about what we were doing. And if you can find the people that are passionate about what you're doing for the right reasons, they want to see a product that you build kind of go out there into the world, that's just immensely valuable. And so I think that for me as an entrepreneur has been super, super helpful.
What about mistakes you've made?
Made a lot of mistakes. Don't let your engineers tell you that you need a new database. So I'm trying to think. You know, one mistake that we made is that I think sometimes we've overthought problems. Sometimes you just have to build things and find out and deal with the fact that people are going to be unhappy or it's not going to work or there's going to be failure. And I think as long as you can see a failure as kind of one more option that's off the table in a longer path towards a big long-term goal, I think that you're in a good place. I think there have been times in the company where we've been sort of paralyzed by so many options that all seem equally good. And sometimes the only way to figure it out is to ship it and find out and ask people what they think and measure it. And that takes a lot of getting used to. I think you have to develop a really thick skin because a lot of people, whether they're users or investors, are just going to say no. They're going to say, like, that's terrible. That's a terrible idea. And a lot of entrepreneurs, I think, that I look up to, they say that like that doesn't faze them at all. I mean, it definitely fazes me. You just sort of have to keep it into check. And I think that actually goes hand in hand with something else, which is I think it's really important to have people outside of your business that you just have really good relationships with. It's really easy, I find, especially in Silicon Valley, to get totally wrapped up into your product. And having like family members and friends that, I don't know, can talk to you about just your life or like sports or anything else actually turns out to be really, really important, because I think it's otherwise really easy to get really tunnel visioned in the way you think about the company, but more importantly, just really, really stressed out. And it's going to take a really long time to build kind of a big product that changes the world. And if you don't take care of yourself in that process, like you won't be part of that ride.
What are your favorite, besides Pinterest, your favorite technology like websites or technology products?
Oh, man, there are a ton. So I think I told you this before. I'm really into Kickstarter. I just think it's amazing. I think the idea of Kickstarter is very romantic, that you have this sort of patron system where you want to build something and people just want to see it come into reality. It's like the meta entrepreneur startup. So I've loved Kickstarter. I'm really interested in education. So I'm a big fan of this professor named Louis von Ahn, who created a reCAPTCHA in the ESP game, and he has a new game called Duolingo, which is supposed to help people learn Spanish. And I just think that's awesome. I think everyone should be able to learn new languages, and if you can use technology to do that, that's really exciting.
Well, he's doing it in a clever way that would make it free for everyone to use, because while you're doing it, you're translating people's stuff on the back end or whatever.
I use Instagram. I think it's a beautiful product, and I think that to me, it's just really exciting what they can do with all these images tagged with all these locations, and they're so personal to people. There's so many products I'm a fan of. I'm very interested in hardware now. I just think the idea of making something and then holding it and showing it to your friends and being like, look what I made. I think there's something beautiful about that, and I'm really interested in hardware that interacts with data in interesting ways. So I bought a Fitbit. I bought my sister one of those Nest thermostats when she moved into her new house. So those are some of the things. But there are literally, I mean, people, there's never been like a more exciting time to be a consumer of products. People are building like such amazing things.
So we're almost out of time. Is there anything else you want to talk about or say?
No, I mean, I think that, I think for me, like, I've just been really excited that so many people have taken an interest in the site. It's a really like weird and humbling feeling that all of a sudden all these people are using this thing that you helped make, and then you're getting to get other people, hopefully, to join you in making something. So I guess the only other thing is, you know, if there are people that are really excited about what we're doing, especially people who are great designers or who are really passionate about communities or who are great engineers, I mean, they should get in touch. Our team is still really small. We're 20 people now, and I think 10 of those people basically have joined in the last 4 months. And there are different ways of seeing companies. Like, some people think of companies as having this like singular figurehead, like Steve Jobs style, that just makes everyone do his or her bidding. But for me, the idea of building a team that itself can like learn how to make great products. I mean, like the team is like the most exciting product that we're building. Like, we're trying to bring together these people from all these different disciplines, from all these different backgrounds, and we're trying together to learn how to build a product that's meant to celebrate like all these interests that people have. And so that's the only other thing. I mean, I'm really excited to work with people that are way better than me. And I think the rest of our team is the same way. So if that's something you're interested in, you guys should get in touch.
Okay, great. Well, thank you very much.
Thanks.